thank you, everybody. And we're going to jump into the castration-resistant prostate cancer. I am going to just have a slide that I keep summarizing and updating every time we have a new drug approved. And as you see here, essentially since 2004 with the approval of docetaxel, we have really seen a tremendous progress in the management of castration-resistant disease. And in 2020, we entered the era of precision therapy. So it's been really great times for our patients. And this is just a list of the treatment options available right now for patients with metastatic castration-resistant disease based on FDA approvals, with the bulk of them are based on an overall survival improvement or progression-free survival improvement. And I'm not going to touch base on the bone supportive treatments and the immune treatment at this point. So this is a clinical case. It's a patient actually that I saw, 72-year-old gentleman with low volume metastatic hormone sensitive prostate cancer. The mets were to bone based on conventional imaging, post-radical prostatectomy and pelvic lymph node dissection 5 years before that. He responded to androgen deprivation and abipred with stable imaging and undetectable PSA for about 4 years. And I should point out his diagnosis was pre-PSMA era, and his management for upfront treatment was also before the triplet era. So he developed confirmed, he responded for 4 years by imaging and PSA, and then his PSA started going up, and despite castrotestosterone, he underwent imaging, and now he has additional bone lesions with also enlarging retroperitoneal lymph nodes. So technically, he's castration resistant after 4 years of systemic therapy, continued to be asymptomatic. He underwent germline and ctDNA testing with no actionable mutations. So what treatment would you recommend for this patient? Select all you think is appropriate here. It's listed in there. Okay, great. Next. So one of the issues are that I think we've, over the past 10 years that we have gone through, is to really address the treatment sequencing and the issues of like what would be best in terms of starting treatment, what would be next, what about combinations, and so on. So some of these listed questions, I have put them in there because these are really questions that have been always in our debates and discussions. Are you better off giving patients AR inhibitor versus switching to chemotherapy? What about ABI after ENZA versus ENZA after ABI? What about AR targeted therapy first, followed by chemotherapy with docetaxel? Then what about those who, you know, give docetaxel versus AR targeted after progression on frontline AR targeted therapy, doci versus cabazi? Where does radium fit now that we have the lutetium PSMA treatment? What about precision medicine and targeted therapy? And what about clinical trials? So with that, I think we'll put in there that combination strategies, more is not always better. And in this case here, ENZA plus ABI, as I showed you also in previously, it does not add much, so that's not something to be done. ABI plus prednisone in radium was also a negative study, so that's goodbye, so to speak. Therapy sequencing at this point, AR targeted treatment sequence, ABI followed by ENZA provides relatively better clinical benefit, meaning frontline ABI followed by ENZA is better than the opposite, and this is based on a trial. Cabazi has no advantage versus docetaxel. This is again the slide from the trial that was done and reported looking at, again, looking at the combination. It's a phase two with a crossover allowed. And essentially, based on this trial, actually, I favor, if we're going to do something, give ABI if you need to, followed by ENZA, or forget about ABI and just go ahead with ENZA in that regard. the Kabazi versus Kabazitaxel versus Docetaxel on the left-hand side. You can see the curves. You can't even put a pointer between the curves. And so clearly, Kabazi given up front is not an advantage. The flip side would be is Kabazi given after docetaxel progression actually gives a benefit over second line AR inhibitor. And this is pretty much based on the CARD trial that was reported a few years ago now. Now, we've entered the era of personalized medicine and precision medicine. And again, for the sake of time, I'm not going to go into all of the details, but we're basically looking at precision medicine using the genetics of the disease to identify effective therapy. Phenotypic precision is essentially the equivalent of what we're doing right now with the PSMA theranostics there. So the work with PARP inhibitors really dates back to literally the 1960s when the PARP research began. And just for the sake of time, again, this is from a review article that is really excellent in JCO Precision, highlighting how long it actually took to make it into the clinical practice in there. And in the US, basically, in 2020 is when we saw essentially the PARP inhibitor first approved, and there was data coming up in 2019 on it. Now, what really facilitated the precision medicine research in prostate cancer is, I think, the work that happened by the Stand Up to Cancer team that essentially led to the identification of the molecular profile of metastatic castration-resistant prostate cancer. And one of the critical findings from that work was basically that more than 20% of the disease will have DNA repair pathway aberrations. There were two clinical trials, phase two trials that were part of this project. One was with both of them were with PARP inhibitors. One of the PARP inhibitors was olaparib, and there was clearly responses in the cohort of the patients that had the HRR mutation. That together with the Stand Up to Cancer effort and preclinical data and biological data fueled the design of the PROFOUND trial. The PROFOUND trial, when we designed it, we basically had it be biomarker pre-selected up front. So the patients are registered. They have castration-resistant disease. They've seen prior AR inhibitor, potentially, and chemotherapy. And they had progressed on it, and they had to undergo genomic testing. And then if they had the BRCA1, 2, or ATM, they were in cohort 1, randomized to olaparib or control. And the control was not placebo, was an AR inhibitor per physician choice. Cohort B basically was anybody that had not non-BRCA and ATM were in the cohort B. And the primary endpoint was progression-free survival, because when we designed the trial, we allowed crossover. And the idea was to give the patients the opportunity to be in there. The data was reported in actually ESMO. I think we reported it in 2019. The paper came out in New England in 2020. And essentially, what you look at the separation of the curves in the BRCA cohort with regard to progression-free survival, and this was centralized radiographic progression-free survival, there was really significant improvement in that. And then when you look at the two cohorts, A and B, again, you can see significant separation of the curves favoring the olaparib, and there were other secondary endpoints, including pain progression and so on. All of these showed improvement. Now, we then followed up with a report on the overall survival, and essentially the same trends continued. The overall survival was better compared to the control arms. And again, when you put the two groups together, definitely there is benefit, but clearly the driver of the benefit is pretty much the BRCA group. Now, when it comes to lutetium PSMA, this is another sort of the phenotypic sort of precision therapy. This is the trial that was reported by Dr. Sutter and colleagues and then led to the FDA approval. This is pretty much was done in what I would call end-stage disease. The bulk of all of the patients have seen multiple lines of therapy. And the fact that you would see an overall survival improvement and disease control is pretty impressive considering the state of the disease at the time. So now we have different trials going on, and this is a summary in here from a prior package that I generated, looking at the different treatment with the PARP inhibitors and targeting potential synergistic pathway. For the sake of time, I'm not going to through all of it, but the biggest part is really the combination of the PARP inhibitor targeting with AR inhibitor. And three clinical trials were reported looking at patients now with frontline castration-resistant disease with, and again, the design is a little bit different with each one of them, and again, for sake of time, I'm not going to go through it, but happy to share the slides. But the bottom line is this, all of them are looking at the combination of an AR inhibitor plus PARP inhibitor in the frontline castration-resistant prostate cancer. The data was reported and essentially PROPEL showed an improvement, specifically while you see some trend of benefit in HRR negative patients, the bulk of the positivity comes in from the HRR positive patients, specifically you see it in the BRCA2. Similarly with the magnitude situation and talazoparib and Enza, again, a lot of benefit. Essentially, the FDA approved at this point these drugs specifically in patients with, when it comes to magnitude and magnitude and PROPEL, essentially only in the BRCA 1 and 2 approval. When it comes to talazoparib and Enza, was in a broader patient population as was tested in the clinical trial. So here is the summary of how the FDA approval was for these trials. And I think, again, the devil is in the details in terms of the subtleties, because one of the questions is, are the PARP inhibitors equal? Are they different? Why do you see different trends and responses and all of that? And I think this is something that needs to be delved into deeper. One of the questions that I had, which was actually long before any of these trials were designed, was actually because of the preclinical data on the synergy between targeting AR and the DNA repair pathway, is, are you, again, better off giving treatment combination upfront, or are you better doing sequential therapy to minimize the burden of the patients, which led to the design of the Brackaway trial, and several of my colleagues here were actually participating in the study. And this is basically pre-selected patients for BRCA 1, 2, or ATM, and they were randomized by alterations. They had to be, you know, the tissue had to, or tissue or ctDNA, and then the patients were randomized to abipred, olaparib, or the combination, and the trial allowed actually crossover for the patients who were on the single agent arm. And we reported this data at ASCO GU and published it last year. And the bottom line is this, upfront combination is better than giving treatment sequentially or single agent. One thing I would point out, it's a small trial design. It did cost us quite a bit to run the study, but I think the when you look at the trends are very clear favoring the combination upfront. Now we have the PSMA-4, and I guess we heard about the results, so I don't have to go through this. It looks like the FDA approved it in the earlier stages, so congratulations to the team that did the study. But essentially, now we have Pluvicto moving upfront a bit more into the earlier stages of castration-resistant prostate cancer. And this is just from the prior presentation, and I'm sure there's going to be more presentation and data coming out, but again, demonstrating again an improvement of an AR-targeted therapy, that the lutetium PSMA is better in this situation. Now we have the radium combination with AR inhibitor. This is the PEACE-3 trial, which you heard earlier about, and Silke Gullison presented this at the ESMO. And it's interesting, when you see the benefit of combining the Enza with the radium, what was interesting is this, is that part of her, and I had a discussion with her, part of her thoughts that she had put in her presentation, that there was limitation, you know, there was concern about the fact that while there is radiographic progression-free survival improvement, that they didn't think this directly measures clinical benefit. Now, we can debate that, and I do think that this is something that would be interesting to see when we get into practice. I don't don't know how many people would actually do that. Just a show of hand, how many people will actually use this data to treat patients with ENSA plus radium, castration-resistant disease? Show of hand, up. Okay, just two? Okay, three, okay. So it'll be interesting to see how things will evolve. So again, now we go back to all of these choices in terms of castration-resistant prostate cancer, and there are definitely several clinical considerations for therapy choice. What did they get for hormone-sensitive disease or non-metastatic castration-resistant disease or metastatic castration-resistant prostate cancer? What kind of symptoms they have? What about comorbidity potential for tolerability and so on? The drug availability, the cost, logistics, the genomics, patient preference, and access to clinical trials. So there are several, again, treatments that are going on right now in combination strategies. So I do think that a lot of stuff is going to emerge over the next year or two. And I think that with all of this thing that I just presented to you, I would like to know what your response right now for this patient. So if you don't mind voting. So again, this is asymptomatic with early disease progression to castration-resistant disease. Okay, majority clinical trial, if another one, ENSA. Okay, I think that's fair, yeah. So he actually started ENSA, and I will update you how he is going to respond. So with that, I think this is there. So again, for sake of time, I'm going to be just leaving this for you to read just to speed up time because I don't want them to lose their flights. But essentially, I think that one of the critical factors that I think we have to be mindful of is as we move effective treatment to earlier disease states, which has a better return on investment, so to speak, in terms of health and survivorship, is how will this impact response to the agents in the castration-resistant space? Because now that we're doing triplet therapy and things like that and hormone-sensitive, what would be the best choice for a frontline castration-resistant and how were the likelihood of response and so on? So definitely I do think clinical trials are needed for optimal sequencing of treatment in that regard. Thank you very much.
So now we'll be talking about EZH2 biology and its role as an emerging therapeutic target. We will start with a video. Oh, sorry.
Prostate cancer cells depend on androgen receptor signaling to grow. Androgens, such as testosterone, bind to the receptor, keeping the cells alive and proliferating. Androgen deprivation therapy is used to stop cancer growth. Most cells die, but some develop resistance, adapting to survive in a low androgen environment. EZH2, enhancer of ZEST homolog 2, is predominantly localized in the nucleus, where it functions as a core component of the polycomb repressive complex 2 and regulates gene expression via histone methylation. Some resistant cells increase EZH2 expression. EZH2 alters gene activity, silencing tumor suppressors and allowing cancer to continue growing, contributing to castration resistance. EZH2 expression level has been found to be elevated in more than half of all castration-resistant prostate cancer tumors, compared to 27% of early untreated prostate carcinoma cases. Understanding EZH2's role may help develop new treatments to prevent resistance.
Okay. So with that, we'll talk a little bit more about EZH2. Prostate cancers are smart, just like other cancers, and with our changing treatment landscape, there's evolving mechanisms of resistance. And when we think about resistance to hormonal therapies, castration-based therapies, AR pathway inhibitors, we can think about this in three distinct categories. You can get secondary alterations of the androgen receptor through mutations, amplifications, variants that reactivate AR signaling. This is a dominant mechanism of resistance. We can get bypass and crosstalk mechanisms, which has been the rationale for several combination strategies. And we can get target indifference, androgen receptor indifference, where tumors can progress by reactivating alternative programs to grow even despite no androgen without androgen receptor dependence. And just to note that these general categories of treatment resistance to AR therapies are the same as we see in other cancer types that have effective targeted therapies, EGFR, BRAF, other targeted drugs, where you can get secondary alterations in the target, you can get bypass crosstalk mechanisms, and you can get target indifference. And one mechanism of target indifference that we talked about earlier is histologic transformation from one lineage to another. And this lineage transformation is predominantly driven through epigenetic reprogramming. So just to step back on epigenetics are ways that all cells turn on and off genes without altering their DNA sequence. And in the most recent Hallmarks of Cancer, published a few years ago now, non-mutational epigenetic reprogramming and phenotypic plasticity have been added as new hallmarks of cancer. So this is really important for cancer initiation, progression, and resistance across many malignancies. When thinking about epigenetics, we can think about DNA modifications, for instance, adding methylation, methyl groups to gene promoters that act to silence downstream gene expression. We can also think about histone modifications, chromatin changes that open and close chromatin to allow for transcription to be activated or transcription off of certain genes. And these are dynamic changes that can occur and be context dependent. EZH2 is part of the polycomb repressive 2 complex, which is a very important role in lineage specification. This complex deposits H3K27 trimethylation to the DNA to silence downstream genes. And in normal development, activity of PRC2 is important for cells to differentiate into lung, kidney, liver, brain, et cetera, based on the activity of PRC2 in certain to certain cellular contexts. And in cancer, even transient loss of polycomb components can induce an epigenetic cancer fate. So this is a really important component of cancer initiation. And in prostate cancer, EZH2 has been implicated in plastic lineage transformation from one phenotype to another, as in other cancers. So there are a number of ways that cancers can dysregulate EZH2. In some cancers, there are gain-of-function mutations involving the EZH2, and tazemetostat is FDA-approved for epithelioid sarcoma and EZH2-mutated follicular lymphoma that have activating mutations in EZH2. But several solid tumors don't have mutations, but instead they have overexpression, and that's what we see in prostate cancer and some other malignancies. There's other mechanisms by which EZH2 is dysregulated. When we look across prostate cancer progression, we can see that EZH2 with disease progression from benign to localized disease to CRPC to neuroendocrine prostate cancer is upregulated. And this corresponds with downregulation of its target genes because EZH2 in the PRC complex silences certain target genes. Beyond its role in silencing genes, EZH2 can also activate genes, and this is considered the non-canonical function, not the way the PRC complex and the catalytic function of EZH2 normally works. Instead, it can activate androgen receptor by interacting with the androgen receptor. It can also interact with other transcription factors, like MYC transcription factors, to change cellular identity. So it can also upregulate genes in addition to downregulate genes. And part of the reason why EZH2 inhibitors have anti-tumor activity is through its regulation of cell cycle genes by activating cell cycle genes. And when you inhibit EZH2, you can suppress cell cycle genes, resulting in growth inhibition. And in prostate cancer, EZH2 collaborates with the androgen receptor to elicit this effect. Preclinical studies have shown that EZH2 can cooperate with androgen receptor, and there's synergy between EZH2 inhibition and androgen receptor inhibition in AR-driven castration-resistant prostate cancer. There's also preclinical synergy in non-AR-driven prostate cancer in models associated with lineage plasticity, RBP53 models, enzalutamide-resistant models, that EZH2 inhibition can actually reactivate the androgen receptor and resensitize to AR pathway inhibitors, a disease state that normally is, as I mentioned before, indifferent to AR signaling. And there's both single agent activity and combination activity in this context. We've been really interested in understanding what are the downstream targets in adenocarcinoma versus neuroendocrine prostate cancer, and just to mention that there are different targets, both canonically and non-canonically, and I think that's important when we start thinking about biomarkers that are being developed in the context of clinical trials. And there are clinical trials that are underway, including the mevrometostat trial that will be discussed next, as well as the PREDICT trial that was mentioned earlier, to try to understand what are the genomic, epigenetic, or transcriptomic features associated with EZH2 response. And this could help guide potentially combination strategies as well. So there's strong rationale for combining EZH2 inhibitors with AR pathway inhibitors in both AR-driven prostate cancer and in lineage plasticity. And one potential question is, could we think about even applying this earlier to prevent resistance? Obviously, that's lots of steps have to happen before that, but I think there's biologic rationale in thinking that way. And there are a number of other potential combinations that might also be useful in the future. Preclinical data in other contexts have suggested synergy with chemotherapy, and some preclinical data with docetaxel. And then there's immunotherapy, PARP inhibitors, AKT inhibitors, and potentially even cell surface targets when you inhibit EZH2, upregulation of certain cell surface targets that may have implications for radioligand therapy, T-cell engagers, and others. There's a number of studies across many cancer types, including prostate cancer, that have suggested that EZH2 has an immune modulatory function, and it suppresses MHC class 1, and inhibition of EZH2 can sensitize to CTLA-4 and anti-PD-1, again, not just in prostate cancer and in others, and there are some trials that are looking at this combination. There's preclinical data to suggest targeting EZH2 and PARP may be an important synergy, and we've actually been exploring that at Dana-Farber in a phase 1 trial looking at the combination strategy. And there's a recent study published in Nature looking at the crosstalk between EZH2 and AKT that may also have relevance. This paper was in triple-negative breast cancer, but is also being explored in prostate cancer. So just to summarize, there's strong biologic rationale for targeting treatment resistance pathways through epigenetic modulations with EZH2 inhibition, and this can resensitize to AR pathway inhibitors, and this is important for targeting AR-driven castration-resistant prostate cancer, as well as targeting lineage plasticity and the emergence of neuroendocrine prostate cancer, but the context and the targets of these two different processes are different. Understanding biomarkers of response and the development of novel combination strategies may help guide future trials in the future. Thank you. Oh, we have another video.
CRPC can develop through multiple mechanisms, including AR-dependent and AR-independent pathways. Most CRPC tumors remain dependent on AR signaling even after potent hormonal therapies. With prolonged AR-targeted therapy, less commonly cancers evolve into AR-low or AR-negative states, escaping treatment effects. One form of AR-independent CRPC is histologic transformation from prostate adenocarcinoma into neuroendocrine prostate cancer, a highly aggressive and treatment-resistant form of CRPC. In response to AR therapy, prostate cancer cells adapt by upregulating EZH2. This epigenetic regulator silences tumor suppressor genes and other pathways, allowing cells to survive despite low androgen levels. EZH2 can also activate other genes, including AR signaling through its non-canonical function. Over time, these adaptations contribute to both AR-driven and non-AR-driven castration resistance. Preclinically, EZH2 inhibition can reverse lineage plasticity and resensitize CRPC to next-generation hormonal agents. Combined therapy targeting the androgen receptor and the epigenetic regulator EZH2 can reverse castration resistance and also enhance anti-tumor immunity. Several studies investigating novel EZH2 inhibitors in combination with AR-targeted therapy are currently underway.
All right, I'll start with the last talk of the day. Recent and ongoing clinical trials of novel therapies in patients with mCRPC. A lot of topics have already been covered, and I'll mostly focus on the mevrometostat data, the EZH2 inhibitor, which was just presented in ASCO GU. So this is about which one of the following statements about me is a lie? I've done camel riding numerous times as a kid.
No way.
Dr. Agarwal has been a three-legged race winner, and I've climbed Mount Kanchenjunga, which is the next tallest mountain next to Everest. It's pretty slam dunk. I did a camel ride, by the way, multiple times.
You're brave.
Yeah. So we can... All right. Let's keep going.
So which one?
Obviously I didn't climb the mountain. Yeah, I only went up to the, not even the base camp, it was below the base camp. I did something, but.
Yeah, but the camel can take you up.
Yeah. Yeah. If you growing up in India in a sort of desert, it is not a big deal to do a camel ride. Everybody does that.
I've so. Been a donkey ride, actually.
Yeah. So this is my conflict of interest. I have no personal COI. I will cover these topics. Actually, many of them have already been covered, so it will be easy. I'll start with the PARP inhibitor plus ARPIs. Dr. Hussain did a tremendous job. Bottom line is, PARP, when we inhibit AR, the PARP comes to the rescue of the cancer cells. The concurrent inhibition of PARP and AR may lead to improved efficacy of both agent. And this leads that these data led to these three trials, and Dr. Hussain has already gone through these data. So I'll come to the PROTAC. Dr. Slobin did a fantastic job of talking about the PROTACs. These are molecules which bind androgen receptors and target them to proteasomal degradation. So much better drugs, technically, if everything turns out to be true, we don't really have to, may not have to really worry about enzalutamide or abiraterone down the line. So PROTACs have the potential to replace these current AR inhibitors, like these AR inhibitors have replaced bicalutamide. So this is how I look at the potential of PROTACs. However, the current data are quite preliminary. These are the three PROTAC inhibitors which have been reported so far in earlier phase one trials. And we see prelim activity, which is quite encouraging. And based on these, phase three trials are being started by many of these pharma companies. And we really hope to see PROTACs evolving into a viable oral treatment strategies for our patients with metastatic CRPC. So coming to the T-cell engagers, these are the way I explain to my patients. These are like bridge between the immune effector cells and the prostate cancer cells. So they provide the bridge through which the immune effector cells like T cells can interact, can actually recognize prostate cancer cells. And these are the data of all the bispecific T-cell engagers. We have created this slide. Feel free to use it for your patient education. So far, my take on bispecific T-cell engagers is, other than the STEAP1 targeting agent with Dr. Petrylak and Dr. Slobin have already discussed, the activity seems to be quite preliminary, and we really need more data beyond the STEAP1 targeting to see if they are viable drugs to go into phase 3 trials. I think T-cell engagers will be nice partner to other combination therapy regimens. The way I look at the T-cell engager future, they are going to be probably partners to other targeted drugs. So that like multi-agent cocktails, which can actually cause complete long-term remissions in our patients. So to conclude, these are pretty prelim data so far, but STEAP1 targeting seems to be very promising, and the drug is being tested in the clinical trials. So the CAR T cell therapies, the way I explain to my patients, CAR T cells are like putting a GPS on the T cells. We put the GPS, basically change the receptor, they recognize prostate cancer cells much better. You inject these drugs, these T cells, and they look for prostate cancer cells. So far, data are quite prelim. I won't go through the individual phase 1 trials, but I think they have promise, again, in combination regimens rather than monotherapies. I really hope we have strong, very effective CAR T cells, but so far what I have seen, these are going to be more effective as partners in combination therapy regimens. Antibody drug conjugates, we already see the history being made in bladder cancer and breast cancer and many other cancers. Prostate cancer is lagging behind, but it's a matter of time. These are four PSMA targeting T antibody drug conjugates. I have summarized the data for all the trials which have been reported, quite prelim so far, but it's definitely a promising strategy. If radioligand can do that, antibody drug conjugates should be able to do that also. These are other targets of ADCs beyond PSMA, and we can see there are multiple targets here. STEAP1 is one of them, and I'm really hoping some of them will pan out and will evolve to a phase 3 trial, at least for some of them. And again, very promising drugs. Actinium-225, another radioligand therapy, another way to target our patients' prostate cancer cells. These, in my personal experience, these have lower bone marrow toxicities, at least based on what I have seen so far, better tolerated, and the data, this is the trial we have conducted together. Dr. Mike Morris has presented these data in one of the meetings in the last 1 year, and quite promising so far. So we look forward to these drugs being tested in phase 3 trial in the near future. EZS2 inhibitor, Dr. Beltran has done a fantastic job of talking about the biology. I will not touch upon that. This is the previous EZS2 inhibitor, tazemetostat. The data are here. It did not really result in statistically significant improvement in radiographic PFS versus enzalutamide. However, it may be different with mevrometostat. So I'll come right to the data of mevrometostat. This trial was presented by Dr. Mike Schweitzer, phase 2 trial. And if you look at the design, pretty simple design. These patients had prior abiraterone. They were randomized to mevrometostat plus enzalutamide versus enzalutamide. And if you look at the radiographic progression-free survival, it was improved with the combination with the hazard ratio of 0.5. This is one of the most promising combinations I have seen, at least based on the phase 2 trial so far. When is the last time we saw a PFS, RPFS hazard ratio of 0.5? So really a very exciting and promising combination. Objective responses, PSA responses, all are pretty striking. Drug is pretty well tolerable. And diarrhea was the only grade 3 side effect, which is worth mentioning, and all these side effects can be modified or can be controlled by modifying the dose or dose interruptions. So based on this, this phase 3 trial has already started. We are recruiting on this trial. This is patients with metastatic CRPC who are progressing on abiraterone, and these patients are being randomized to mevrometostat plus enzalutamide versus enzalutamide or docetaxel. So docetaxel is one of the control arms, and radiographic progression-free survival is the primary endpoint. Overall survival is the key secondary endpoint. So we look forward to completion of this trial in the near future, and hopefully trial will be positive. There's another trial, MEVPRO2 trial, right after failure of first-line ADT. If this is for those patients who have not really been exposed to ARPI in the hormone-sensitive setting. And there are patients like these out there in the community, mostly in the urology and radiation oncology practices, and this trial is going on. And there is another trial which is being started, MEVPRO3 trial, in the hormone-sensitive setting, and we look forward to starting the trial in the near future. Last drug is opivesostat. Dr. Petrelak has already discussed this. This drug targets CYP11A1, which is the first enzyme in this pathway. This is like removing the adrenal glands medically, medical removal of adrenal glands. So obviously these patients require prednisone, they require some mineralocorticoid support, but overall the data were quite promising. And based on this, two phase three trials have already started in this, which control arm of ARPI in patients who have had progression on a prior ARPI. With that, I'd like to conclude that we are looking at a revolution in the treatment paradigm of metastatic CRPC, with several agents expected to garner regulatory approval very soon in the near future. And my personal take is combination therapies, not monotherapies, which will be the key for our patients with prostate cancer. And our goal will be not to improve objective responses or PFS. Our objective will be to put them in complete remission. So how to induce deep responses which will last for years. We have seen this in melanoma, in kidney cancer, in lung cancer, in many patients with immunotherapies. This is going to happen in prostate cancer. I'm just not sure how soon, but it's going to happen in prostate cancer. Thank you very much. So this is a clinical case. I was too excited to leave, sorry. So this is a case, 76-year-old man with obstructive urinary symptoms, PSA was high, imaging studies did not show metastasis, radical prostatectomy was done, lymph nodes were negative, diagnosed with localized prostate cancer, undetectable PSA, patient got lost to follow-up after surgery, and then patient presents in October 2021, 3 years after radical prostatectomy with bone pain, PSA is 450, metachronous, MHSPC, which should not exist if patients are following up with their radiation oncologist or surgeons, but this happens unfortunately. So high volume disease, we can see here in the bone scan, CT scan do not show visceral metastasis. Patient was started on ADT plus docetaxel chemotherapy, and patient is progressing now. In October 2023, rising PSA level after ADT plus docetaxel, genomic profile doesn't show any actionable mutations. Tempus, this is a Tempus profile. Patient was started on enzalutamide. And if you look at February 2025, rising PSA level now, 3 more bone lesions. Patient have received ADT plus docetaxel followed by enzalutamide. And we can see no visceral metastasis. Patient wishes to continue treatment. Obviously, there are many agents. Which agent you will choose? ADT plus docetaxel followed by enzalutamide. And now we have these 4 options. Please choose one of these. So obviously, lutetium-177 is the most popular option here. I think radium is also very applicable. Patient does not have visceral metastasis, and I use radium in my clinic too. Next.
I would have used the
Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah.